Welcome back. For those of you who read the Sunday newspaper, and I understand that there are, encouragingly and astonishingly, 400,000 of you who still get a Sunday Tribune. In that paper, you can get to it today. You don't have to read it now, but you can get to it today or tomorrow. Maybe you got to it earlier today. There's a long piece in the arts and entertainment section about the upcoming documentary titled Punch Nine about, they don't come much more towering than Harold Washington. One of the producers, Raymond Lambert, is in studio. Director-producer Joe Winston is on the phone. We may pull Joe in, or we may just spend 10 minutes now talking about Joe Winston. Raymond, it's a pleasure to meet you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
I have not seen any of the film, but writing about it and interviewing Joe compelled me to go back and look at the ample examples of Harold Washington that exist on videotape, on a few horrible, to my mind, documentaries that were made right after his death by local television folk. You don't have to say any of this. I'm saying it. Okay. These horrible, you know, sickeningly idolatrous and that didn't seem to get Harold at all. How do you tell me about your history, if there is one, with Harold?
So I actually came, I moved to Chicago in 91, so I was
not here during that
time. So it's really, I knew of him because I grew up in the Philadelphia area, so Wilson Good was our guy at that particular time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, so I was paying attention, but not to the extent that I have becoming a part of this project.
Well, and Joe was in high school. I mean, yes. He knew Harold and shot him once in Rockefeller Chapel. In seeing... Well, did Joe call you and say, "Hey, I'm working"?
Yes.
How does this? Yeah. How does a documentary world work?
Sure.
Did Joe say, "Well, you're a very accomplished man. You won a Peabody Award, or what? Did you,
sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
How does that work?
I didn't want to do another documentary, to be honest with you.
Why?
They take so long and so much time. It's so difficult and so hard that I just thought, after Maya Angelou, that was enough for me. And then Joe said, "Well, just take a look at this. I've got like 7 minutes. Why don't you just take a look at it and tell me what you think?"
That's how it happened. And with 7 minutes, much of it featuring Harold.
Yes.
Your initial reaction, I know you can't take me back to the
sure.
visceral feeling you had at the time, but this was, to my mind, one of the most viscerally charismatic human beings to ever walk on this planet.
I agree with you in total. And in that 7 minutes, and as you know, Joe's a fantastic editor.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe the story hadn't been told again. And I'm thinking, I'm a sucker for being a part of telling a dynamic story that I think would resonate with a lot of people, and this was amazing. So
let's get Joe. Joe is on the phone somewhere, maybe having some incredible Labor Day. I know you're not at the Burning Man Festival, Joe. But what was, Joe, what was the 7 minutes that you showed Raymond that hooked him on the project?
Hi, it's Joe Winston here. Yeah, I showed Raymond what we call a sizzle reel,
yep.
which was just kind of, it's the trailer for the movie that's not done yet.
Right.
And basically, it was just enough to draw you in if you didn't know about Harold Washington, sort of the incredible ups and downs of the 1983 Chicago mayor's race.
Ugh.
That put him in office, and the way that he built his coalition, and then he wins the Democratic nomination, and then suddenly the Democratic Party and the white voters all abandon him for somebody named Bernard Epton, whose slogan is "Before it's too late," and Harold barely ekes out a victory, and then he wins, and then the city council abandons him, and the council wars begin.
Yeah.
And I think that I managed to convey enough of, you know, we stole music from action movies for it because it was just a demo, and it had enough of this. It gave you this roller coaster ride that I think gave Raymond, you know, who wasn't here, a feel for just how incredible that moment in time was.
One of the reasons, as you told me in the piece that's in the Tribune today, and you people should read that, you 400,000 who still get the paper, was one of the reason motivating factors for you, Joe, was the fact that you were worried that, especially in the sort of misguided euphoria that followed the election of Barack Obama, that people had forgotten Harold Washington. Yes.
And I think more importantly, forgotten not only who Harold was and his complexity, you know, not just a black first, but somebody who had an ambitious agenda, but also forgot the battles that he fought and what they meant, what his vision was for Chicago, and how that telescopes out in this way that's almost Twilight Zone eerie to the struggles that our country is going through today.
Well, we all thought, and please, Raymond Lambert, get in on this, too.
Sure.
We all thought in the wake of the Obama election that we were in this some kind of post-racial society that was going to be good, and it turned out to be anything. It turned out to be what's flipped 8 years later to be a kind of bizarro world in the wake of that. What do you think?
Well, for me, I guess I didn't have personally... My expectations weren't
okay, sure,
because I've sort of been here before, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's what Harold reminded us of. And I think, having studied some of the other mayors, I was in Atlanta when Maynard Jackson was mayor, so I had seen different things happen before. So, I kind of, you know, I thought the expectations were a little bit outside. I did not see what's going on now. I really didn't see that, but. As Joe was saying, I've had the opportunity to study Harold, study that particular period of time, and it is eerie, the similarities to where we are today.
Yeah. You are an African-American man,
yes.
I must say. Unless we're on TV, it's sometimes hard to tell on radio. I could be an African-American man. Joe, what was it about, not for you guys to get in a mutual admiration society, but what was it about, how did you meet Raymond Lambert, and why did you think he would be a good collaborator for you on this project?
Well, Raymond and I have both worked with Bob Hercules, with whom Raymond made
sure.
the wonderful, you know, biopic on Maya Angelou. And so I was casting about for, I needed some additional producing muscle power to get this Harold Washington film off the ground, because it's a big lift to do Harold justice. It's a lot of work, and I needed teammates on this journey.
What did you think when you first met him?
Oh, Raymond?
Yeah.
Well, Raymond comes from an interesting background, because I had helped him with a piece on comedy. You know, he has a history running a black-owned, black-focused comedy club in Chicago. So Raymond comes from a very interesting background. I like working with people like that, you know, who might be coming at a subject sideways. Because one of the things I think that destroys a lot of civil rights documentaries is being a little too pious. I think you alluded to that earlier.
Yes.
Yep. Yep.
For sure.
Yep. Oh, you did. You worked
I think
on
we the- worked on the Chris Gardner Happiness Bank video. I think that was the one time. You edited that, I think, Joe. It was a short. I don't know if you guys know Chris is from the Pursuit of Happiness.
But did you work on that documentary, Funny Business?
Yes, I did.
Man, did I love
Thank
that
you.
Show. I may have had, you weren't on the radio, or I may have even written about
right.
it. That was about, you know, I used to cover comedy as a when the comedy boom of the 70s
sure.
and 80s happened, I covered
Alan Johnson and that.
Oh, Alan was one of my great pals.
Yeah,
one
I
of
miss
my
him
great
dearly.
Pals. So you did that. So you
yes.
had a talent. When you start to gather this team, Joe, who else gets involved? I mean, when you say you need this producing muscle power, and indeed making you do have, I'll talk about your Kickstarter thing too, because I want you to raise the money you need to make this kind of thing. It is hard to make. That's why Raymond didn't want to make another one.
Exactly.
Who else do you enlist?
Well, Sonia Jackson is with us too. She's helping produce the film. She comes from a foundation background. So she has a really interesting and deep presence in that world, and was drawn to the story of Harold Washington. And she's also going to help us generate an impact campaign to use the film, you know, once it comes out, to actually make a difference for all the people who don't know Harold's story and can learn from it.
Are you, I know you thought this at the beginning, and Raymond, you may have too, but it occurs to me, and certainly I have been getting emails since that piece was posted online from people who literally had almost forgotten, some had forgotten Harold,
sure.
and some were way, Joe, probably, you know, 10 years younger than you. They were alive maybe when
right.
he got elected, but they have no sense of who this guy was, because there isn't much Yeah, well, there's the Harold Washington Library.
Sure. Well, you know what's interesting about that? We did. We're working closely with Harold Washington College. It's a
good
professor there, Asif Wilson, Dr. Wilson, and he told us about a study that he did. He did a survey of 100 students that attend Harold Washington College, and he asked them, who is Harold Washington?
This is going to hurt me, isn't it?
Less than 15 people knew.
Oh, my God.
They thought it was just a name on a building.
Wow.
So
wow. Yeah.
I think that's an important part of it, as Joe's talking about, that we, as Joe calls it, and he says it better than me, we don't want him to become a Santa Claus. And
yeah,
I think
Black
that's a
Santa
great
Claus.
Quote, right?
Yeah. Joe, thanks for being on the phone wherever you are. You're going to be on the phone for another half hour because I really want to get the initial reaction to that story in the paper today is pretty encouraging, not to me as a writer, but should be encouraging to you as documentary makers.
That's great news.
Those people who do remember him with astonishing fondness, in part because of the people. Bruce Elliott, the owner of the Old Town Ale House, who's older than I am, said, best mayor in my life, hands down. And we know what he means.
We need to call him, Joe.
We know what he means by hands down. Because screening at the Old Town Ale House. So, Joe, stay on the phone, and we'll continue this conversation after the news. Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on Tune In. It is 10:30 on the dot, and here with the news brought to you by Team Hochberg is, and Roger Badish, you may want to come in here because you had a relationship with Harold Washington, too.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so think about coming in here when you have finished delivering the news.
Sure.
Thanks.
Okay.
Welcome back. If you are a reader of the Tribune, you saw a piece in the Sunday Tribune that still goes to 400,000 homes in this area about, it's part of the arts and entertainment fall preview section, but there's a picture of a man named Harold Washington in there and a story in there about Harold that mentions, and not only he, but my guest, Raymond Lambert, who is co-producing this thing with director-producer Joe Winston, who is on the phone with us. And Joe and I go way back. Joe's been sort of telling me about this for a couple of years. Joe, you've really been working on this for about 5 years, haven't you?
Yeah, it's taken a long time to really plumb the depths of Harold Washington. We've tried to talk to as many people as we can who knew him, you know, who worked with him.
Yeah.
Even people who worked against him.
You said that some of the so-called enemies, most primarily Alderman Ed Burke of the 14th Ward and Ed Verdoliak, Fast Eddie of Council Wars of the 10th Ward, did not, and probably, to my mind, probably never will talk to you. But Dick Mell did. Dick Mell, who of the 33rd Ward, who famously stood up on the desk in the wake of Harold Washington's death and the horrible fight to take control. You found him to be pretty open, didn't you, Joe?
Yeah, I think enough time has passed. You know, one of the good things about that is that, you know, maybe people have some perspective on that time. And Mel was interested in reflecting on it. You know, he gave us a window into kind of how the city worked back then. And, you know, what he stressed was the fact that the people who ran the city, who were all white men at that time, were very threatened by somebody who was not only wanting to give black people their fair share, but to change the way things worked, to make it a real democracy. They weren't ready for that.
You've interviewed some 45 people, I think. You know, I even got a note from, after the story appeared online, from Bernie Upton's son, Dale, who said, I wonder if Mr. Winston would like to talk to me. And I'm thinking, yeah, probably would. I have in the studio Roger Badish. Pretend that we're interviewing you for the Harold Washington documentary.
Okay.
And you don't have to tell the inside details, but you helped Harold hook up his stereo system in his house. How did that come to be?
Well, the staff wanted to give him a Christmas present. And so they bought him a component stereo system. And
you were doing what at the time? You weren't working at some record store.
No.
Yeah.
No. I was in the mayor's press office. I was the only press aide that was held over from Jane Byrne.
Why do you think that was, Roger? I don't think I've ever asked you that.
I don't know. I like to think that it's because I was competent in my job, that I knew what I was doing. Part of it was I think they couldn't get anyone that would come in at 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's a good reason.
To review the videotapes. I used to videotape all the newscasts from the previous night and then edit them down to Chicago stories, things from different Chicago departments, dub copies of it and give it to Chief of Staff. Where and to the mayor's office, the mayor's press off press secretary,
Alton Miller.
Well, even before
Alton, Laura Washington, or
Laura was the assistant press secretary, Grayson Mitchell.
Right. Yes. So that's what you're doing.
So that's one of the things that I was doing. I was also in charge of all the public service announcements for all the city departments. We had started up a program under Jane Byrne that kind of brought all that together under one umbrella and tried to get more publicity out there for all the different projects that the city was doing. My belief was that, you know, we're doing the public's work here.
Yeah, sure.
Your tax dollars are paying our salaries. We are doing these programs for
Jesus.
You. You should know about
Jesus,
it.
Jesus, does that make you an unusual city employee?
I know.
What, are
I
you
know.
Kidding? I'm surprised they didn't put you in jail.
Why should I do that? I originally started with Jane Byrne, but working in the as the press aide in the Streets and Sanitation Department. So when I was hired there, that's where I started, and then I became the photo editor after Fred Rohde's daughter went home to have a baby. I took over the photo editor's job for
Jane Byrne. Harold himself say, hey, I'm keeping you?
No, I don't know how it happened. That day after the election, I went into work. It was later in the evening. Grayson Mitchell was there. Steve Cruz, who had been the assistant press secretary under Jane Byrne, was still there. A couple of other people from Jane's administration and from the incoming administration had to put out to the media a press release of all the new officers, all the new top people in the new administration. And apparently I'm the only one who could type fast enough. I'm not kidding.
I'm serious. This is actually fascinating.
I was there. It was late in the evening. A lot of the people had gone home already. And I'm sitting at a keyboard. This is 83.
Yeah.
So the computers aren't that great in 83. You know, they weren't even computers. They were word processors. Right. And they're dictating to me all the bio info. We put out two documents, and I have them on my website, on my Facebook page. I kept them.
Wow.
And it's a separate biography and then a press release about who was going to be appointed in what top position. And I'm sitting there typing out.
When did you first meet Harold face-to-face?
Oh, wow. It had to have been at some point in the office.
Yeah.
It was before the moment you asked me about when he got the stereo system.
Well, you're in his apartment. You're intimates by
Well,
then.
We played a trick on him because we had a little, a small little boombox that we were supposedly playing music out of, and I had the stereo system I'd already put together, which was now playing. I had it in boxes, hiding. And this is in the press conference room outside of his office because that's where the staff Christmas party was. And so I said, hey, Merry Christmas. This is your boombox. And he goes, he kind of gave a little look, a little chuckle. And I said, nah, we're joking. And I opened up the package. You know, I pulled the boxes out of the way, and he loved it. And I have three pictures from that were taken by staff photographers.
Yeah, they'll take those.
And so it shows him kind of looking at it and then kind of doing a little dance. I had to then pack it up and bring it to his apartment.
Put it in there.
And a few nights later, I'm up there. His coffee, I don't know what you call it. His consultants, his friends, who were not City Hall employees.
Right.
Guys from the hood. that he had known for decades were there. And I walk in, and they're all sitting there having dinner. He had a glass table in the front room, and they were all sitting on the couches around it. And the apartment was sparse. There was hardly anything in there, and everything was immaculate in its place. The only place he had a lot of stuff was in a what I take to be his study. And there was no desk in there. There was just a very large Naugahyde type of reclining chair.
Sure.
And on all four walls, floor to ceiling books.
Wow. Well, he did love to read.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't you excited? I mean, what are your feelings about?
I'm loving this. There's not only a ton of stuff that I've got, but there's the Harold Washington collection at the Washington Library.
Yeah. They've been very
box by box by box. And if you go online and do enough searching for me, my name in one of the boxes pops up.
Oh, my God.
So I've been boxed.
As the only honest man, only honest man at City Hall. Joe, you and Raymond must have, I mean, just listening to Roger talk, you must have gotten tons of interesting stuff from the other 45 people you've interviewed. Joe, what they've told you is you were a young man when Harold was first elected. You're still in high school. What have you? Can you give me a sort of general idea about how your feelings about Harold may have changed in getting loaded with all of these details and impressions from other people? You admire him more?
Absolutely. I was prepared for Harold Washington, you know, as the sort of pugnacious fighter for civil rights, because that's what I remembered from 1983, you know, all these years later. But what it took some digging to appreciate was the breadth and the depth of his vision for Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, the way that he included everyone, and he did not have to do that. You know, it would have been enough for him to just be a civil rights figure, but he went much further than that, and he seemed to have a plan, kind of like they talk about Elizabeth Warren right now. He had a plan for everything.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of the dream job that he was ready for. And it's just so inspiring, because I think that if we could, I think it's important not to put too much on one man, right?
Sure.
And people in the black community know that all too well, right? Your hero dies and the movement falls apart, and that happens again and again and again. But what he did and how he did it is something that we can all learn from.
Raymond, you must feel the same way. I mean, just I saw you listening to Roger talk here, and it's just the insight and information. And
I think the other thing is not being born and raised in Chicago for me.
I think this is good that you're not from here.
It's not only a national story, but it's an international story. And we've uncovered footage from all around the world with him. And people have said to us, they're like, we didn't treat him as a mayor, we treated him as a statesman. So he was followed, and people listening to him. And this election was so important. And I feel like I'm preaching to the choir with you guys. Yeah. But one thing I discovered was this: there was impact. We've got interviews with Tom Bradley, who was saying, we're all watching, because if Harold can break through in this city,
in this town,
it can have impact throughout the nation.
Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating. I'm going to tell you about there's a few more days left for the Kickstarter campaign to help raise the money that it takes to make this kind of thing. I'll tell you more about that after a short commercial. Joe Winston on the phone is the director and co-producer of Punch 9, a documentary that we all hope will be finished by the end of this year and will come out sometime before the election season goes insane next year. I'm sitting in studio with his co-producer, Raymond Lambert. We just had Roger Badish in here telling what I thought was a pretty amazing story.
Absolutely was.
I just got to think, too, Joe, for you, you've heard... You know, you interviewed my old pal, Alton Miller, who was mayor's press secretary. Many of you remember him idiotically just as a guy who wore sunglasses on the top of his head. But he was the guy in the office the day Harold died, and is, I think, very insightful about Harold the man, too. Did you find that, fellas?
Yeah, because Alton traveled with Harold Washington wherever he went.
Yeah.
So I think he would ride in the limousine with him all over the place. So he got to watch him operate up close, and had a sort of a keen sense for what Harold was up against, which was not just trying to, you know, manage his political opponents, but make real structural change.
Yeah. This Kickstarter campaign ends in, I think, just a couple days. Kickstarter is this organization. It's funded it's funded a number of projects of friends of mine, and it's a very effective way to not be beholden to,
yes,
you know, weird money people who might want to exert some kind of influence, but just the public. Raymond, talk to me about the Kickstarter.
Sure.
You go to Kickstarter. I suppose you just go, yes, to Kickstarter, Harold Washington, and you'll find it, right?
Yes. If you go to Kickstarter.com and punch in Punch 9 or Harold Washington, it'll pop right up. They've been a great partner. They are very excited about the film. They made it one of their favorites.
That's right.
And as you were saying, I like to say it democratizes access. And whether you have $5 or you have $5,000,
right,
you can participate and be a part of telling this story. So I think that's what makes it really, really great.
You must, as this gets closer to being completed, and you're sort of, you know, more than two-thirds of the way to your Kickstarter goal, that just, and again, it's anecdotal influence, that the buzz that you know, piece today in the Tribune created, it gives me a real indication that this is going to be something quite special. Does that, Joe Winston and Raymond Lambert, does that put any kind of, I can't imagine, Joe, I've known you for so long, it doesn't put any kind of extra pressure on you, does it? I think the pressure here is kind of as if Harold is looking down, and you want to get this right for him because he was such a complex guy, I think, and his legacy is further complicated.
I'll let Joe start, but I certainly have an opinion on that one.
Yeah. Well, I certainly think that the main thing for me is that this is the last chance to make a film about Harold Washington where we could still speak to,
yep,
a large number of people who knew him.
Yeah.
And were there and were part of the story. So that was that was part of a sense of urgency, and it led us in the way of the foolishness of documentary filmmakers everywhere to rush headlong into this,
right,
without, you know, having all the pieces in place as far as funding and so forth, because we just could not wait. You know, our first interview was Dr. Tim Ewell Black, who at the time was 97. Now,
right,
he's still with us at 100, but
yeah,
101 or however old he is. But we couldn't have We couldn't wait for that.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. I think also what I've discovered is everybody has a Harold Washington story, and everybody has a perspective. At least in Chicago, they do. So there's a certain amount of sort of pressure that we want to, you know, not only tell the story correctly, but we want to satisfy some of these audiences. But as filmmakers, what I think I also like about it is that we show everything, the warts and all.
Well, because, you know, the other thing about it, he was a human being.
Absolutely. But we show that.
Before he was a politician, sure, you know, he was a human being. And I think the interesting thing, Joe, and I know to get into this, he and Tim were classmates at Roosevelt, were they not? Roosevelt University?
They had to be, maybe 5 years. They both have a history at Roosevelt.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were there at the same,
yeah,
time or not, but they had to be close. So I think Harold will be 95 now, I believe.
What do you think? That's an interesting thing you bring up. What do you think? And it's not your place as documentary makers to include this in any kind of film. What do you think, Joe, you first, what do you think Harold would think of the city now?
Interesting. You mean, yeah, if he was like the ghost of Harold Washington,
yeah,
presiding over us.
Yep.
I think he'd still, you know, I think he'd be pleased with some things, but I think he would still think that there was a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no question. You got to think
for
the
sure.
same thing,
absolutely.
Raymond. I mean, he'd see some of these neighborhoods and rip his hair out, I think.
Absolutely.
And I know you guys would love to get Ed Burke and Ed Verdoliak, you know, to sit down and be frank and open and about this. But are there any other people, you know, I was talking to Raymond off air about the President of the United States, the former President of the United States. I'm
sure.
not sure this one would have that much to say. But the former President, Barack Obama, who a lot of people, I mean, the common, I think, misconception is, you know, kind of Barack is standing on the shoulders of Harold Washington. Are you going to try to get him to talk?
Raymond, I'll let you take that.
Okay. Yes, and we're still attempting, but obviously...
He's a former president who's got a book to write, and he's got a daughter going to college.
I've taken to telling my kids that, I said, hey, guys, we got turned down by the president again today. We're getting closer to yes.
I think we'll get it. I think it would be a terrible mistake for him not to be part of this. And the other notion that, Joe, you and I talked about a bit, that you guys have so much material that I now like, as opposed to being wary of it, the new landscape that is television now with Amazon Prime and Netflix and, you know, I don't know if Walmart's making TV shows. I don't know what's going on. But to make this documentary a two- or three-part series, because this is it's a big, big story, fellas. Do you agree, Joe?
We certainly have enough material if one of the streaming platforms wanted to do a limited series. Because when to understand Harold Washington, you have to understand Chicago, you've got to understand the machine, Richard J. Daley. It's a lot. It's a rich, deep, complex story with colorful, fascinating characters. And if we had that much time, we could go that deep.
Yes.
Well, I hope you guys are able to pull that off. Joe, you know how much I've ever admired you from the This Week in Joe's Basement days, which Raymond tells me he's never seen an episode.
He won't send me it.
Why is it?
You won't let
him watch one? Joe?
He has not put one in Dropbox. That's his favorite.
I should have kept the tapes. But I have, and the other documentary you made after that, Joe kind of discovered Burning Man, and I had never even heard of Burning Man, and he came and said, you want to review this show, Rick? And I said, what is this? And now it's turned into, you know, some nightmarish Woodstock reunion kind of festival. Joe, I've always admired your work, and Raymond, what work I've seen of yours, that Funny Business was just one of my all-time favorite documentaries.
Thank you very
talking
much.
About the black comedy club scene. So I am as excited as anybody out there about this. Go
Thank
to
you.
Kickstarter, Harold, Kickstarter.com, Harold Washington. You'll find it. You can $5, or if you're some kind of millionaire sitting there, give him $1 million.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I bet you will. But it's hard. It's hard work. I mean, this is years of work, and it moves slowly. And there's like today, here's Roger Badish. The newsman comes in here and tells this amazing story that sounds like it's likely to be some small part of this whole thing. Raymond, it's a pleasure to meet you
in
person.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joe, thanks for everything, and keep me posted, will ya?
Sure, Rick. If you have 30 seconds, I can give you a quick closer.
Sure.
It turns out, according to his press secretary, Grace Mitchell, that Harold Washington did have contact with Donald Trump. At the time that Harold was mayor, he was starting the process of trying to redevelop Navy Pier, and then real estate developer Donald Trump apparently came to town wanting to get involved, and the two, shall we say, did not see eye to eye.
I hope Roger Badish has a VHS tape of that meeting. That is fabulous. Joe, take good care of yourself and keep me posted on all
Absolutely.
This.
Thank you.
Raymond, thank you for coming in the studio. Thank you all for listening out there. Dan Long, thanks for the engineering genius. Ro Coleman, thanks for the producing expertise. Carl Amari will be coming up, and I will see you all on the radio next Sunday. Chicago Stories told 24/7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 11 o'clock on the dot, and here with the news
is... It's like Don Kleppen's up there.
Who? Who's... Oh, look, we have TV in here. Hello, Don.